It is my first time being here, and it's so exciting hearing people's stories and also getting to tell a story myself. So yes, I'm from Formoso, grew up there in the 80s in what I guess we would call a permissive household as a social worker. But really there were rules, and they were pretty basic. One was get good grades. The second was don't embarrass your parents. And the third rule was, if you get in trouble, don't call. So those were pretty straightforward. The first one was pretty easy because we were kind of bright kids. This is my brother here. We were pretty bright as kids, and we read a lot. So we did pretty well in school. And I really whipped my way through my folks' fantasy and sci-fi collection, which is full of these quest fantasies about this hero who goes out and he's got this wisdom he has to learn or this journey that he has to be on. And so I read through those. And then I got into the classics, which is full also of these quest journeys where our hero goes out and he has to go on the road but also find himself inside. So I was probably 14 when I knew that I had to get the heck out of Osos. I had read about all kinds of characters in books, and I knew that they were out here. They were out here in America, and I had no access to them. But I couldn't run away from home because that's breaking rules 2 and 3. So I was 18 in October of 1991, and I left. And I had a motorcycle. It was a Honda CM400E. It is not a touring machine, but it's what I had. So I took off. And the first night, I was in Tehachapi on a Halloween night. And it snowed, which I had never really encountered before. I didn't know about weather. And what is it, 60 or 70 degrees in Los Osos at all times? So I went into town, and I got some gloves, and I got a Therm-a-Rest to sleep on when I was camping, and I kept going. I was not going to stop. And I headed to Arizona, and I wanted to meet people. I'd read about people in books, all kinds of people. And I probably had kind of a slightly skewed view because I really liked Southern Gothic fiction, which is full of deafs and mutes and midgets and haunted people and freed slaves and all sorts of things like this. But I wanted to go find America and meet all kinds of people. And I did. And I met bikers a lot because there's something about riding a motorcycle is you just kick tires and you start talking. So the first person I met was a woman from a city. I'd never known anyone from a city before. She was from LA and she was riding back from Arizona, and she told me about traffic so bad that you could spend 2 or 3 hours getting a mile on the freeway unless you had a motorcycle, and then you could kind of scoot in between. Oh, this is fantastic. This is wonderful. I've never heard anything like this in my life. And then I met a guy named Targa. We were at the Grand Canyon, because who doesn't go to the Grand Canyon when they're in Arizona? And he was from Germany, and he told me about how in Germany it was so expensive, it was a luxury to ride a motorcycle. It was the cheapest thing that I could ride, frankly. You know what I mean? It's cheaper than a car. The gas is like, you get, what, 80 miles to the gallon? But he said it was a luxury in Germany to ride a motorcycle. So he had come over and come to Florida, and his first exposure to American culture was Florida and a motorcycle training class. And then he'd bought a motorcycle, and he'd traveled, and he was finding America too. So we laid out our maps, and we compared notes first about what there was to see in America when you were finding it. And then he started asking me all kinds of questions about myself. Now, I was on the road because I wanted to hear other people's stories, and not just hear other people's stories like in a book. You know, it's narrated. You can't really ask questions of a book. I wanted to hear other people's stories and be able to ask them questions. But he kept on asking me questions about what it was like to be an American, what it was like to grow up in California, which is boring. And he had all these crazy ideas about Americans. And it never occurred to me that like people could see you as differently than you see yourself. You know, as Americans, we're like happy-go-lucky people who are pretty much right on and all for freedom. And that was not his perspective on Americans. So that was really exciting. And what an interesting idea for an 18-year-old, that people could see you as something other than you see yourself. And I was clearly this Jack Kerouac-like adventurer who had taken to the road to find America but also find herself. And then I ran into my third biker. His name was Frank. He had a Harley Davidson with one of those suicide clutches. And so that was fun. He seemed like a nice enough guy. But then he tried to convince me that I should go with him to his brother's house and that we should hang out at his brother's house. And that didn't sound like very much fun because I wanted to go to Texas because in Texas, they had accents. And I wanted to go to the Gulf and talk to Texans about being Texan and hear their accents and hear them tell me about what it was like to be Texan. And he was like, no, you should go with me to my brother's house and we'll like hang out and party and it'll be great. Well, that just didn't sound like a good idea to me. I mean, didn't sound fun. And it was really clear to me that he thought that I was some kind of chump. And so we're riding along, and I couldn't go faster than him because he had this big old bike and I had this little bike. And so whenever I'd slow down, he would slow down too. Whenever I'd pull off, he'd pull off and try and tell me about how I needed to go to his brother's house with him. And I got very uncomfortable with that after a while. And you might think, well, why not go, you know, go find a cop and be like, dude, this biker is totally harassing me. But I'd had some trouble myself with cops. Whenever I'd run into cops, they were like, well, first they'd search my bags for dope because I was from California. I was clearly high. And then they would give me a lecture about how I shouldn't be riding my motorcycle by myself in the U.S., which, whatever, you know, I was a Jack Kerouac-like adventurer, and I was on my way. So finally, I ditched him. I just, like, slowed down as much as I could, and then he got as far as he was ahead of me that he would allow himself to go, and then I just bailed. I took off. I was done. gang rape didn't sound like fun to me, so I thought, I'm going to go to Texas. So I kept on going, and I met all kinds of people. And I met this guy, Ray, who lived in a little town that had dried up, like it was just going to blow away any minute, because the highway had been built, the new interstate had been built about a mile away from his town. And that was too far for people to stop for their stuckies, you know. So his town had dried up, but he was a nice enough guy, and we went horseback riding the next day. He had some Mustangs that he had adopted. We went horseback riding, and then I kept on going to Texas and had some more adventures. And then I came back on my way, and by then I had actually gained a little wisdom. And I had talked to a lot of people, and I had noticed that people who don't pursue their dreams will try and discourage you from pursuing your dreams. But if you run into people who have pursued their dreams and done the things that they've always dreamed of, they're totally encouraging. So I wanted to hang out with them. So I hung out with Ray again, and his girlfriend was there, and her name was Robbie, and she was a librarian, but she had been a truck driver before. So she told me all about this, and she had adventures, and her sister was there, and she was an artist, and I had such a great time. And I came home, and I was born to be a traveler. I was going to do it again, and I did do it again. I started in the spring next time because it got damn cold, and Texas is full of flash floods. But I did make it to the East Coast. I saw the Atlantic. I swam in the Atlantic. It was the most beautiful thing. I went to Europe on my own. I came back, and finally I settled down and went to college and did all those things. And I started hanging out with a lot of feminists and queer activists. And they were like, oh, right on. You're so brave going out as a teenager on the road alone. That was like a real victory. You're really fighting the fight. And I wasn't. I didn't know. I grew up in Los Osos with bohemian parents. I thought that femininity was a choice. that, like, it wasn't mandatory, that you could be like, oh, yeah, you can, like, be a girl, but I'm not gonna, you know, that, like, you could just, like, not do it. It was sheer ignorance and not naivete, because, I mean, I was pretty smart. It was just like, this is a choice. We get to decide how we're going to be. Like, I can wear lipstick and ride a motorcycle, and that's fine. I can go on the road by myself. I'm going to be fine. Sure, I'll run into people who don't see me as I see myself, who see me as a victim or a throwaway person who deserves whatever they get on the road. But it's not magic. It's not metaphysics. You just find people that reflect that back to yourself. And I found people who were adventurers on the road, too. I found people who reflected it back to me that said, right on, you're on your journey, I'm on mine, let's have fun. And it was the most beautiful thing. And it's not bravery. It's just about making that choice that these social customs are not, they're not obligatory. They're not mandatory. They're not going to go on your permanent record. You get to make a choice. Pick and choose what parts of being a woman you want, what parts you don't. Thank you very much. I'm glad we're here.